Good morning. May it please the Court, Jason Amble on behalf of Appellant Chad Stevens. Your Honor, I'd like to request 2 minutes for rebuttal.
Okay.
There are three issues before the Court, and we'd ask the Court to reverse the trial court. The first is the
trial court. Okay, reverse the trial court. Let's all be clear about what you're talking about. Reverse the trial court's order of that it says order on Discovery Master's report and proposed order regarding plaintiff's motion for reconsideration and defendant's motion for protective order.
Correct, Your Honor.
And this is the order in which the defendant is directed to produce invoices, spreadsheets, et cetera, without task descriptions. That's paragraph one. Paragraph two, there are apparently two spreadsheets that were also reviewed in camera. And the order says produce those in their entirety without redaction. So the first large set of documents, the bulk of the documents, will be produced with redaction. The second is the spreadsheets. So
correct,
are we on the same page?
We are, Your Honor.
Okay.
And I appreciate, Judge Schindler, you clarifying that. The issue stems from the trial court's erroneous conclusion that Mr. Stevens' attorney's fees and costs are damages for the jury to decide.
And I think the crux of the issue that's hotly debated is whether damages, the fact of damages, is an element of the tort of abuse of process. That was the conclusion of the special master and of the court. Is that correct?
That's correct, Your Honor.
And you take the position damages are not an element.
Correct, Your Honor. That the
what law are you relying on for that? I mean, there are lots of cases that say there are two elements to abuse of process, but we are talking about a tort.
Correct.
And if you look at the CPAC case, the restatement, the Supreme Court points to the restatement. The restatement says harm. So if, in fact, you take the position that you only have to prove those two elements, what's your relief? And why wouldn't there be a motion to dismiss because you didn't, there is no statement of grounds for relief?
Well, and that zeroes in, I think, on what the special master was trying to craft in her original order was the existence of damage here being the fees and costs that stem from the abusive conduct. But then the judge later, after the jury determines liability, determining the amount of the fees.
Well, but that all has to do with the bifurcation. I mean, I think we have three issues here. We have the hotly disputed, are damages an element of the tort of abusive process? Secondly, was there waiver? And third, did the court abuse discretion in failing to bifurcate? So don't mix them up. Let's just focus on number one. And with number one, if I read the complaint, well, if I read amended counterclaim number five, the fifth amended counterclaim, I think, is what we're talking about. Are we not?
Correct.
The damages are attorney's fees.
Correct.
That's the relief you're asking for.
Correct.
If we prove these two elements, we want all the attorney's fees that were incurred because you abused process.
Correct, Your Honor. And I think the reason we're here is in the Howe case where the court stated that the fees and costs would be for the trial judge to, or for the court
well,
to decide.
Well, Howe, I mean, you know, it's pretty difficult to hang your hat on Howe. I mean, you had a pro se. The court, Judge Sweeney writing, says the party hasn't cited any authority. So they didn't cite CPAC, you know, and they didn't cite the restatement. So is the restatement wrong? Should we not follow the restatement or CPAC?
I think the court can follow the restatement and CPAC and HAL by here if a jury was to conclude that there were abusive acts for an improper purpose.
Right.
And then the court afterwards concludes what were the fees and costs that flowed from
that. Well, but that goes to bifurcation.
Fair enough. And given my time, I'd like to address both of those because they
well,
are.
But the Supreme Court in the Sophie case said that there's a constitutional right, that part of the constitutional right to a jury trial is the right to have the jury assess the amount of damages.
And if the court goes that direction, I think we have Howe, which if the court decides that these are an element of the damages that go to the jury, it highlights the really where the court erred with both the failure to bifurcate and the implied waiver. The Steele case that just came out from Division II a couple weeks ago that was provided supplemental authority, what you don't have in that August 5th order is any effort by the trial court to analyze why it ordered Mr. Stevens to produce the timesheets unredacted in any effort to explain why they needed attorney-client privilege communication.
They're not unredacted. That's why we started. They are redacted. The timesheets are redacted without task descriptions.
And this is important context, Your Honor. The abusive process claim stems from conduct that occurred while we were litigating a large number of other claims and counterclaims. That litigation is still ongoing. The second part of that order is all of the timesheets related to the abusive process claim unredacted.
Well, it's two spreadsheets. Is that what you're talking about?
Correct. Those are all of our attorney's fees and costs on the abusive process claim. But the problem is that all of that work was done as a result of abusive conduct that occurred while litigating the underlying claims that are still going. That's what we point out. This is a,
mandatory counterclaim or a permissive counterclaim?
I think it would be permissive, Your Honor, but the problem is if we didn't file it, we would have had our statute would have run. So even if it was filed independently, and I pointed this out to the court and said when we added it, that's why we immediately when we added it asked him to stay and to bifurcate this counterclaim. Pointed that out and said we could have filed this separately, but we have a statute that's running. If we hadn't done it, the statute would have been blown. And that's why we from day one asked the court to bifurcate and to stay this counterclaim until the other counterclaims are done. That's the issue. The court in that order, Your Honor, in the August 5th order, the problem, to be very clear, those spreadsheets are significant because it's essentially a vast amount of work that was done related to those underlying claims and counterclaims that are still being litigated. It is our communications with our client. It is our work product on those claims and counterclaims. By disclosing that unredacted, they will have all of our mental impressions, all of our communications regarding those underlying claims and counterclaims that are still being litigated today.
Are those part of the record on appeal?
I do not know if they were made part of the record on appeal.
They are not.
Okay. I can supplement with those. But both the trial
court
and
the special...
Well,
what do you mean supplement? You know that we've already spent a lot of money on a special master who's reviewed these in camera. And from looking at the record, there was a request that the trial court review these in camera, and the trial court said, no, the special master has already done that. And so the special master is relying on the court is relying on the special master. So now you want us to do an in-camera review and second-guess the special master and the trial court?
I don't think any second-guessing needs to happen because what is in that August 5th order, and we've also put this a number of points from the record, both the trial court and the special master repeatedly acknowledged that these timesheets contain privileged information and work product. Both of them reached that conclusion. I wouldn't ask the court to re-review. It's already been reviewed. Both of them concluded.
Well, and because there was no stipulation, then the special master writes this report and says, all right, they won't agree. Here is the proposed order. And so the special master's reviewed it in camera and says, here's the resolution.
But actually what the special master proposed was that the court look at trial management techniques such as bifurcation, and the court failed to do that. Thank you.
Good morning. May it please the court. My name is Emmeline Hart, and together with co-counsel Bill Simmons, I represent the respondents, VFOA. Except for an obvious attempt to rewrite history, Mr. Stevens makes no plausible argument to warrant reversing the trial court's discretionary discovery order. We ask that the court affirm in all respects and grant VFOA its attorney fees and costs on appeal.
Why did the trial court not bifurcate? It doesn't make any sense that the trial court wouldn't bifurcate.
Well, Your Honor, I think one of the things that we need to clear up is actually what the procedural history was about a stay in bifurcation at the time the court was deciding the motions that were before it on August 5th. There was no motion to stay or bifurcate then pending. At the time of that hearing, BFOA had moved for reconsideration, and Mr. Stevens had moved for a protective order.
But before that, the court, it's clear from reading the special master's report that the court had at some point already ruled on bifurcation.
That's correct. But what I'm essentially trying to say, Your Honor, is right now for the court to be addressing a stay or bifurcation is not proper because that was not the motion before the court that got us to the order that you're being asked to review. But with respect to the stay or bifurcation issue, the discovery master and the trial court looked at what happened. You've acknowledged
It was clear the special master was trying to communicate to the trial court, you should bifurcate. But the trial court had already made a decision not to.
I would disagree to some extent, Your Honor. What the special master originally was concerned about was the fact that if Mr. Stevens is asked to divulge these billing records, he may be disclosing something that would otherwise be protected by the attorney-client privilege. But later on, in the subsequent order that reversed or modified her original ruling, she says, well, wait a minute. It is true that he has these billing records that contain attorney-client privilege information, but he has put his attorney's fees at issue by making them the only damages he's seeking to recover in this case. And under the law, BFOA has the right to inquire into those damages. They have the
right. Because you're contesting the reasonableness of the damages.
I'm sorry, Your Honor, I didn't
hear
the
whole. You're contesting the reasonableness of the amount claimed.
We would be contesting not only the reasonableness of them, but to make sure that there's no duplication and that they are, in fact, actually related to counterclaims.
So you agree that your clients are subject to virtually identical reciprocal discovery?
Yes. Okay. Yes. But we are not alleging that our attorney's fees are damages in this case.
No, but you're contesting their damages. And so in terms of amount, there's several cases out there that say that a good indicator of the reasonableness of a total attorney fee is what that was incurred on the other side of the dispute. In terms of the work done, seems like the same thought would apply as a corollary. So what we really have here is when we go back, is what we should have is a case where both sides are simultaneously discovering virtually identical records from the other side as we go along.
Well, I think, Your Honor, the difference, though, is we've not put our attorney's fees at issue, so there's no reason for Mr. Seasons.
Oh, no, certainly there is.
Right, I guess
because you're contesting theirs.
Yes.
You're contesting theirs.
So they are free to serve discovery on us that would get to the basis of what we figure our damages are, but we're not claiming our own.
No, not your damages. The amount of work you've done and what you've done it on and how much it's cost, because that's the best indicator of whether what they're doing is reasonable. Plenty of cases say that.
Correct.
And it does, and they don't have to discover admissible evidence from you. It can be something that leads to admissible evidence. So really what we should have when this goes back is pretty much a free-for-all, where every couple weeks both sides are sending further discovery requests to see what the other side's done.
Well, Your Honor, I think at a certain point that you're not going to do that because you're not going to keep serving that kind of a discovery because at a certain point you have to be prepared to go to trial with what you have. And in this particular instance, the only way that we can get at the issue of Mr. Stevens' damages is for him to provide that discovery. And the case law is clear that things like the amount of your attorney's fees and the date that you incurred those fees, that is a mundane kind of information that doesn't divulge an attorney-client privilege. And so there's no reason why they should not be producing that information. And what the court
Do you agree with counsel that this was a permissive counterclaim?
Your Honor, up until just now, I had not actually thought about it, so I'm not inclined to say one way or the other at the moment.
So as I read this order, and correct me if I'm wrong, but the bulk of the information that would be disclosed is in paragraph 1, and that's without task descriptions. And then there are these two spreadsheets. So it's my understanding that the special master looked at these two spreadsheets and is saying to the court, I recommend you order these produced without redaction. Do you know what's in those two spreadsheets?
Your Honor, I do not because we have not seen it. It's not
so
been
it's
produced.
All, it's all been...
I believe
it's all been discussed.
I believe, and I apologize because I'm not trial counsel, but I believe at some point there was some discovery that was disclosed, and I believe that it's been inadequate, and we've been trying to get what the discovery master and the trial court have ordered disclosed, which is with respect to the attorney's fees. There is the first section is without task description, so essentially removing anything that
That's
might
redacted.
Otherwise. Produce the attorney-client privilege information, that is redacted. As for the abusive process claim, that is to be submitted unredacted, and the issue is that he has alleged a tort.
Well,
There's no question it's a tort.
The spreadsheet, it says it's labeled attorney's fees for abusive process, but obviously paragraph 1 also relates to the abusive process. That's what
the first one relates to all of their attorney's fees, and the second one relates to those attorney's fees related to the abusive process and originally their breach of fiduciary duty tied into the statutory violation.
Well,
so what we're trying to get
period,
at...
But it's during the time period related to the counterclaim.
That's correct.
It's March 13th, so even though it doesn't have the label, it's related to the abusive process.
Okay. Your Honor, it looks like I've been told by my co-counsel that two spreadsheets have been produced, redacted for counterclaims 12 and 13. So I'm not sure if that answers the question that you're trying to ask. So there have been spreadsheets produced, and they've been redacted.
And the order says without.
And the order says without redaction without. As to the attorney's fees for abusive process. What we're trying to get at is they're claiming attorney's fees as damages. They're only entitled to the attorney's fees on that abusive process claim if they satisfy all of their elements. We're entitled to get to the underlying basis for those fees. When they're claiming abusive process fees, are they trying to duplicate something for their statutory violation or their original breach of contract or any of the other counterclaims? Because these are not the only counterclaims
and
claims.
Well, this is the only one that we're focused on is the abusive process. That's
correct.
That's this order that discretionary review was granted on. So
correct.
How do you address the Howe case?
Well, I think Howe or Huff, however it's pronounced, I think actually works in our favor for a number of reasons. First of all, it says that fees and costs are to be determined by a jury when they constitute an element of tort damages. And I think it's pretty clear that this court agrees that abuse of process is a tort.
But then it goes on to say we've been cited no authority that damages are an element of abuse of process.
Because that's not the argument that that particular pro se plaintiff was making.
So here we do have authority cited.
We do. And the other thing with respect to Huff that we need to look at is that the trial court, I'm sorry, that Commissioner Kanazawa noted this in her ruling when she granted discretionary reviews. Huff is also in our favor because it points out that not only is abuse of process a tort, but it's requiring him to prove that he's been proximately harmed by that abuse of process as alleged against Mark Bowdy. The only harm he's claimed is his attorney's fees. If he'd claimed it was damages, generally, I don't know that we'd be having the same issue, but he has put his attorney's fees at issue by saying, those are my only damages in this case. He clearly asks for that in his Fifth Amended counterclaims. He's asking for the attorney's fees he has incurred in defending against Mark Bowdy's abusive process. And what we have, he's claiming at CP 117, those are his only claimed damages. He's seeking the fees incurred as a result of Mr. Bowdy's abusive process at CP 216. And he's alleging wrongful acts causing litigation with a third party at CP 213. He's making these allegations as a tort. He has the burden to produce his damages and allow us to discover those damages, or as one of the court members just indicated, we'd have a summary judgment motion because he's not able to prove all of the elements of the tort, and his claim would fail as a matter of law. If there's no further questions, we would rest on our briefs and ask that the court affirm in all respects and award attorney fees and costs. Thank you.
Yeah. 2 minutes.
Thank you. First, Judge Dwyer, I'll change my answer, which I believe it is a compulsory, arises from the same transaction occurrences and pattern of facts, which is why we had to bring it and why the statute would have passed if we had not. Second, on the procedural history, the special master had actually ordered that none of this discovery would go forward. She
right.
acknowledged that it would require privileged communications and work products, said, I'm not going to let it go forward. They moved for consideration, said, no, that was wrong. All of this should go forward, and that was when we got to the court on August 5th. We, at the same time, had asked for a protective order on August 5th and said none of this should go forward, you should stay it, just like the special master had originally ordered. The court declined to do that and then refused to bifurcate. We then get into the situation with the court at the hearing, and it's the got in the verbatim report, where the court acknowledges, basically, this is big damage that we may cause here if I don't bifurcate and make you turn this stuff over, acknowledges it repeatedly. Special master done the same, and the court orders us to do it, basically says, you brought this counterclaim, you live with it. That is untenable. That can't be the law. That's a Hobson's choice. That's either you exercise your rights, you lose the privilege, you lose your counsel, or you can file, but you're going to lose all that. That is untenable. That's not correct, especially with the severe prejudice that both the court and the special master recognized. Finally, the court, again, I'll mention a Steele case that came out a couple weeks ago, same factors as Dana. What you don't see in that August 5th order is any effort by the trial court to explain why we would need to be ordered to produce the unredacted timesheets, why they would need our communications, why they would need our work product and our mental impressions, even the issues that they're attacking on the abusive process claim. The trial court should have bifurcated this. He provided absolutely no reason. Counsel didn't answer your question and explain why they bifurcated. There's 19 other plaintiffs. This isn't going to save time. This isn't going to save money. It's going to force all these other people to go through a long trial with all these issues.
Well, I think he did say he thought cost was of concern.
I'm out of time. May I respond to that, Your Honor? Yeah. I don't recall him saying that cost, but I would still challenge that because you have, at this point, you had 19 other people in the case, and why we couldn't have a separate trial on this issue with very separate facts, very separate legal issues. There's no reason to have one giant case with all these issues going on. And at the end of the day, you got to look at why we have bifurcation, just like a bad faith case. There's no reason that you can't bifurcate this claim. Thank you very much.
Thank you. Next up is Colburn versus Trees.